Sunday means football. This is Sports Fan Football Sunday. We preview this week's matchups, recap and highlights from all the big college games, plus helping you set your fantasy lineup. It's Football Sunday on Sports Fan Radio 1330.
And this week we mean it. We're actually back on a Sunday. A couple of weeks of Saturday broadcasts. We're back here 10 a.m. to 11 as we are every single week. For the most part. Sports Fan Radio 1330, sportsfanrockford.com. I am Jackson alongside my good friend and fantasy football expert, Jordan Gothy.
I think that's the first time all year you said my good friend. I know we're good friends off the air, but I just kind of, you said it on the air.
We tear each other apart on the air, so, you know, I got to at least start with.
Well, this week especially, because it's going to be a rough week for me.
Why is that?
Because the Packers are one game away from the possibility of going to play for a Super Bowl, while the Bears are, well, stuck at home hiring DeFlippo as your quarterback coach and hiring an offensive coordinator who's not going to call plays.
That's such a Chicago way of saying DeFilippo.
Yeah.
Hey, DeFlippo. That's not even close to a good. That's not even a. That's not even close to a Chicago accent there. I feel like that should be killed. But we've had a lot of games this last week and a couple of upsets as well to talk about. We've also got our all disappointment team. Jordan, you brought a couple of wide receivers that we're going to be adding to the list, and we're going to compare whose all disappointment team is more disappointing. And then we'll talk about the NFC and AFC championship game coming up a little bit later on as well. It's a busy day and one of the best of the entire football calendar. I'm excited for it, so let's dive in. Jordan, where would you like to start?
Let's start right in order that started the whole great football. It was another great football weekend.
It really was.
It was a lot filled with a lot of good games, Vikings and 49ers. And boy, was it really the story of two halves. I mean, it was a close, intense defensive battle the first half where the Vikings got control early, and the 49ers just came storming back. It was turnover after turnover. I mean, just consistent pressure on Kirk Cousins. I mean, there was a couple of plays where I counted one Mississippi, two Mississippi. By the time I got to three, Kirk Cousins already had a guy in his face or he was on the ground. I mean, he had less than 3 seconds to throw the ball. That's not enough time unless you're running screens.
Yeah, they tried doing a lot of that, but
it didn't work very well.
You're right. Dalvin Cook was shut down. San Francisco's front seven was destroying the Minnesota offensive line, and it wasn't necessarily a strong offensive line this year. At least in years past, you've seen better, and I'm talking several years ago because the last couple, it just hasn't been as strong, and it was definitely susceptible for that rush by Bosa and the rest of those guys up front for San Francisco. Six of them? Is that what the total was?
Six. And I'm pretty sure there was about 10 pressures, too.
Do you have the total for Dalvin Cook?
He rushed for 21 total yards the Vikings have rushing in the game. The 49ers held him to 21 total rushing yards.
And that was the recipe to success, right? Because if Kirk Cousins is at his best when he runs the play action, you have to establish the run, and San Francisco knew that going in, and they just couldn't make it happen.
We talk about the star receivers on the outside. Adam Thielen's been banged up. Stephon Diggs has been really inconsistent all season long.
And erratic, too, right. By the way. What happened to him over the last 2 weeks?
He's a diva.
Starting to turn that way.
Yeah, but what's been the identity for the Vikings all season long has been how great they are at running the ball, how great they are at run blocking compared to pass blocking, even though you have two great receivers on the outside and you have a guy like Kirk Cousins who knows how to get the ball downfield. And he still had a nice year in the regular season, but once you eliminate the run game, it's like the Vikings just like they get their two arms cut off, like they can't do anything.
I felt like in order for them to win, and I'm talking about the Minnesota Vikings, I felt like they needed a big opening quarter. Because if you get down at any point, that run, run, pass offense that they've been running up there for the last couple of games, it's not something that's going to work. And if Dalvin Cook is not going to get going, you're not going to be able to run play action to get yourself back into the game. So they needed to come out with a big opening quarter, maybe a big opening half. It just didn't happen. And the longer that San Francisco hung in there and Minnesota wasn't able to get anything really going, you just kind of figured that the 49ers, it was their game to lose.
It was. I mean, Nick Bosa had an injury scare there, but he popped right back up. I mean, just relentless pressure all game long. I mean, it was a great defensive game plan. Really, I mean, Salah must be he's probably the most underrated defensive coordinator in the entire National Football League. I mean, where this defense was a year ago to where they are today.
Sure.
I mean, this defense really could lead them all the way to a possible Super Bowl championship. I mean, who knows?
Now that Minnesota's out, do you think Stephon Diggs is on the Vikings next year?
I think so. even though he's had his moments, I don't see the Vikings parting ways with him.
Yeah, he's too talented of a
guy. Yeah, I think you got to figure out a way to get this system back on track. I think Mike Zimmer has done a fine job. I know they let go of their defensive coordinator, Gus Edwards, or George Edwards. I still think that they're going to find a way to keep him in Minnesota because without him, I mean, there's really no passing attack. Adam Thielen has not been the same. There's question marks. Is he really 100% healthy? Because the second half of the season, I mean, he was nowhere to be found. And he showed that in the playoffs, too, either against San Francisco and against New Orleans. He was just nowhere to be found.
It's also selling low on Stephon Diggs, who is a supremely talented route runner and a guy who can make some big plays for an offense. His numbers don't look good, and if they look at the film, they're going to see that he was non-existent for the team for a lot of this year, at least in terms of filling up the stat sheet. So I think the value goes down. You want to sell high on somebody like that if you're going to get rid of him. I think he stays in Minnesota next year. I agree with you on that. It was also Jimmy Garoppolo's first playoff win.
Yeah.
He hasn't suffered the same fate that the next quarterback we're going to be talking about did, as Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens never got it going against Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, that was a game where everyone going into it seemed like, yeah, the Ravens are the best team in the league right now, but this just has upset written all over it, and that was the case. The Titans just came storming in, had an exceptional game plan to limit Lamar Jackson and to make him beat you through the air, which he has not proven that he can do that once the run game is eliminated. It showed that. It showed last year in the playoffs against the Chargers. They had 6, 7, 8 defensive backs on the field at a time, it seemed like, and they just made Lamar Jackson make Lamar beat you through the air, and just really didn't showcase that in the last two postseason games that he's played in. And the Titans, I mean, their defensive front deserves a lot of credit. I mean, Simmons was just beating double teams left and right. I mean, they could not block him. Same with Jarrell Casey. I mean, they're just causing havoc in the backfield, and really with an injury to Mark Ingram, really couldn't get anything going. Lamar Jackson, every time he got loose, it seemed like he only got 3, 4, maybe 5 yards at most. They just couldn't get their offense in rhythm. Sure, they had a lot of total yards, but when push came to shove on third down, the Titans defense stepped up.
Interception, turnover on downs, punt, field goal. That was their first half, and then Baltimore came out of halftime with a turnover on downs, fumble, interception, touchdown, turnover on downs, end season.
Do you remember after the Titans scored their first touchdown, they got a big turnover, well, fourth down, fourth and one, the Ravens went for it. They did not get it, and they were the best team in the National Football League this past regular season. When it came to fourth down conversions, the Titans stopped them. They got the ball right back, and Tannehill just took a shot the first play. Great call. Take a shot right down the field.
Right
as soon
away.
As you get a big turnover,
right
guess
away.
What? Big play, the guy catches it, touchdown. You're up 2 scores.
Amazing.
Exceptional coaching job, again, by Mike Vrabel and that offensive staff, especially their defensive staff. But just, I mean, Mike Vrabel is turning into really one of the young, rising coaches in the league right now.
He's on the same trajectory right now as Derrick Henry, who has made himself a ton of money this postseason.
I mean, he's a guy, it's like a lot of defensive players have compared to playing Derrick Henry. I know Tyrann Mathieu, the safety for the Chiefs, just spoke out earlier this week that when they played back in the regular season, it was like hitting a brick wall. I mean, a brick wall. It seemed like, Tyrann said, when he hit him, it seemed like he broke his jaw. Because that's the amount of force that Derrick Henry runs with. And he's a big guy.
You're tackling a guy that's bigger than Bobby Wagner.
That's crazy.
He's larger than Bobby Wagner.
And he's a guy that, I mean, their whole offense just revolves around him. I mean, 2 straight games now in the postseason where he's rushing for over 30 carries a game, rushing for over 180 yards a game, 195 against Baltimore. And that was a top-3 defense all season long. I mean, we talk all about the Ravens' offense, how great Lamar is, how great the offense is running. No one talked about their defense.
They were 14-2 because of their defense being
great,
too.
And the Titans just came in there, and they knew it was going to come out, and they knew the run game was going to get them, and they just ran all over them. Ryan Tannehill only threw the ball for 83 yards through the air.
And that's all he needs.
That's it. Just don't turn the ball over.
That's
all you need.
That's all you need. And it's working, dude. But I think they're going to need Tannehill a little bit more as he's going to go on to face the winner of the next game we're going to talk about. The Kansas City Chiefs moving past the Houston Texans. But if I just told you that sentence, it wouldn't explain the whole story. Jordan, what the hell happened?
It seemed like Bill Belichick just coached himself right out of a job. I mean, honestly, I would be surprised if
Bill
he's
O'Brien,
back.
Bill O'Brien, you mean.
Or who'd I say?
Bill Belichick.
Bill O'Brien. Okay.
He's fired, too.
Oh,
get his ass out of here.
it seemed like to me Bill O'Brien coached himself right out of a job. I mean, just terrible decision after terrible decision after terrible decision. I mean, there's times where they ran a fake punt fourth and four at their own 25 or 30 yard line.
Well, like, this is after, and you should also give credit where it's due. They went up 24-0, and in part that's
start.
Because of Bill O'Brien's game plan going into the game. So, look, I mean, that was a positive, but the whole fake punt situation where it just took way too long and it seemed fishy. It just seemed fishy the whole time, and it didn't work, and Kansas City stopped them. When you're on the road and you're at Arrowhead, it's one of the loudest stadiums. Mm-hmm. I still don't know if it's louder than Seattle, but others claim that it is. You don't want to give that crowd a sliver of hope or anything to cheer about, and that's what Bill O'Brien did. He made a bad decision, and it snowballed. It snowballed into an avalanche real quick.
It's funny because Tony Romo was talking about on the broadcast that how great the Houston special team unit is. It's a top five in the league. They went from bottom five to top five in 1 year. And he's just raving about how great this is, and that's what's going to win them the game today. And then all of a sudden, they get three straight turnovers on special teams. I mean, like, what are you doing? And you're right, just kept snowballing until really an avalanche where Houston just had no clue how to get back in this game. The Chiefs just came flying back with that offense. Their defense was all over Deshaun Watson. Just a bad all-around game, quarters 2 through 4 for the Houston Texans.
Watching the Kansas City Chiefs is watching, to me, the football equivalent of the Golden State Warriors when they ran off 3 out of 4 championships. Your defense isn't the best defense, but it can lock someone down at times. But when you get an opening, you can get so hot that you turn a game from where things look bleak and you just don't have it today into a Klay Thompson game 6 scenario where you're scoring 37 points out of nowhere and the other team's trying to figure out exactly what the hell happened. Watching Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid run that offense and the playmakers they've got, Travis Kelce, and all of those guys, watching that happen, to me, it's the Splash Brothers on a football field.
Speaking of Travis Kelce, it seemed like the Texans just forgot that the Chiefs had Travis Kelce. It seemed like whatever game plan they had going into the week just did not work. It was a terrible game plan because he was open on every single play. And when the plays he wasn't open, guess what? There's defensive pass interference because they were holding him, double-teaming him. I mean, at one point there was three guys on him, and he still found a way to try to get close to the ball. I mean, it's just terrible game plan by really the defensive coaching staff for the Houston Texans. I mean, they had no answer for Travis Kelce. 3 touchdowns in the game. I mean, he's their biggest threat on that
3
offense.
3 touchdowns in the second quarter, Jordan.
That's crazy.
In the second quarter. That's insane to me, and that's something that I don't think will ever be topped by another tight end anywhere.
I said this going into the week, though, on last week's show, that even though the Chiefs lost to both the Texans and the Colts at home this year, it's a tough place to go in there and win. It's a tough environment. I couldn't see it happening twice to the same team and 3 times total. I couldn't see that happening.
It's insane. And I believe the Packers went in there, but that was when Matt Moore was playing quarterback for Kansas City as well. And speaking of the Packers, and speaking of a team that got off to a really good big lead, didn't quite give the whole entire thing up, but the Green Bay Packers move on to the NFC Championship game. They take down Seattle in one that's an opponent that brings back some horrible memories for Packers fans everywhere. And, Jordan, I got to be honest, man. I feel like I've watched the same Green Bay Packers game a lot this year. A lot. This one, to me, reminded me of the Dallas Cowboys game when Aaron Jones scored 4 touchdowns. They went up something like 31-7 or 31-10. Mm-hmm. And it just about came down to the last drive. Same thing here with Russell Wilson. It really looked like Green Bay with their building a lead early, play soft zone coverage, stall on offense, give momentum to the other team, make them confident, and then hang on for dear life at the very end until you have to make an incredible play kind of scenario. Doesn't seem like that's going to work against a San Francisco team, but it did against Seattle and just by a thread. What did you see?
Yeah, it's a perfect way to describe it. I mean, we're going to talk more about it in the third segment, but I mean, it seemed like it was a tale of two halves, really, for the Packers. It seemed like once they got out big, like you just described, it seemed like they were in cruise control. And it didn't seem like they wanted to take any big risk, which you don't when you're up like that. But in certain situations, you kind of have to. You kind of have to make a big throw. I know Rodgers is just completely against that. Never wants to take a chance like that. But
well, he took a couple in that game when he needed to.
But the Packers, I mean, they end up getting the win. I mean, a beautiful throw to Devontae Adams late in the fourth quarter when he needed to get that third down conversion. I mean, as much as I don't like the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, That was one hell of a throw and one hell of a catch from Davante Adams and Aaron Rodgers.
And it was another one where his feet were facing toward the left wide receiver, toward the left sideline, and he threw it across his body over a defender and in between another one right in the breadbasket. It was incredible. But it did come down to a final third down play where a little controversy happened, because it can't be a Green Bay Packers victory without a little bit of controversy attached to it.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that Jimmy Graham would make the biggest play in the last 3 years for the Green Bay Packers? But more importantly, Jordan, was that a first down?
In my opinion, I don't think it was. It seemed like, I know the yellow line, a lot of people were joking that, yeah, it's not on the actual field, but you could tell that, like, his head was probably right at the first down marker, but the ball wasn't. The ball and the rest of his body was not.
Well, the problem,
I don't consider that first down. That's just me.
Well, the problem with the yellow line is that it, in fact, was off by half a yard. So they were able to zoom in. They were able to show this. And I think Davante Adams tweeted that, or set this photo up on Instagram. He drew his own red line parallel to where the yellow line was from where the actual first down marker was on the sideline. It was off on Fox. It was just off by a tad. Not a ton, but enough to where you can make that argument where, all right, yeah, his knee wasn't down, and he still carried a little bit more momentum in. It was close, but I didn't think that there was indisputable evidence. I'll tell you, though, if that referee would have came back and said, we got some extra, what was the phrase that he used? We had more evidence come in, but it's still, despite more evidence, that the call on the field still stands.
Right.
When was the last time you've ever heard of a referee saying that there is more video evidence that they just added after making their call? Right?
That's kind of a cherry on the top this season for the referees, is it not? I mean, they've had one bad year. I mean, from start to finish. And it's just that game, the Packers and Seahawks, that call, that situation, that was just kind of the cherry on the top.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I also feel that Packers fans are probably going to appreciate this team more when the season ends. Because right now, they are the cardiac pack, and they are going to make you feel like they're going to lose every single game. And somehow, they've pulled out 14 of 17 of them. And so we'll see what happens. We'll talk more about that in the third segment. A team that we are not going to appreciate more as time goes on are the all fantasy, all disappointment teams that we have been building here over the last couple of weeks. And Jordan, we are down to the wide receivers, the most disappointing wide receivers in all of fantasy football for the year 2019. We have constructed ours, and we're going to match them up and see exactly who has the more disappointing football team up next. Sports Fan Radio 1330.
More Sports Fan Football Sunday next on Sports Fan Radio 1330. Now back to Sports Fan Football Sunday on Sports Fan Radio 1330.
Some news to talk about. The championship games we'll get to as well. It's Football Sunday on Sports Fan Radio 1330. Eric Jackson alongside Jordan Gothy. Here on SportsFanRockford.com, the Sports Fan Rockford app, which you can download and listen to us for free. The podcast available prior to the airing of the show by magic. Though we didn't say we were live today, did we? It'd be a lie if we were.
We haven't been live all year.
Oh.
So that would be a surprise.
Oh, the fourth wall is crumbling down right now. We've got some all disappointment teams to discuss here for fantasy football, but we want to talk about something a little bit more optimistic first, Jordan. Tell me about what we are doing next.
We are going to talk fantasy football, even though it's over. We're still talking fantasy because we're handing out our fantasy football awards for the 2019 regular season.
Yeah, this is our bread and butter, man. We're not trying to tell you who to draft next year yet. We're just, you know, we talk fantasy football all year. We can't let it go just yet.
Not yet. So first up, the LaDainian Tomlinson Award. Last year, Christian McCaffrey won it for the most consistent player week 1 through week 16. Now, the top five, the nominees I narrowed it down to, Christian McCaffrey, last year's winner, Michael Thomas, Lamar Jackson, also three guys that will be in the MVP vote, Travis Kelce, and Ezekiel Elliott were the top five.
This is one of those where I feel it's like the offensive player of the year also wins the MVP. Like, whoever wins this award that you're giving out is going to win the MVP award, correct?
I feel the exact same way with
okay.
this. Most consistent player. My vote, I think that's the obvious one.
Hold on. Christian McCaffrey.
Okay. Well, we agree. It's unanimous. Christian McCaffrey.
I was trying to guess who you picked.
He's won two awards so far. Christian McCaffrey is our winner. He also won the Ironman Award for playing in all 16 games and produced in all 16 games last week.
Although I do think Emmanuel Sanders got robbed for that one.
Yeah, he played in 17 games. Not a lot of people know that. Now for a more disappointing award. This is called the Anti-Clutch Award, also known as the Jameson Crowder Award.
Okay.
From a couple years ago.
See, when I thought during the break, I thought that you were giving this award out. I thought you were calling this the LaDainian Tomlinson Award.
No.
The Anti-Clutch Award. And I said, wow,
LaDainian
dude.
LaDainian Tomlinson was always clutch in fantasy. Huh. Still today has the best fantasy year among all seasons.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I did not know.
Chris McCaffrey came within 9 points of him this year.
Huh.
But still, Tomlinson had the best year.
Historical
only three nominees. Yeah, historically. Only three nominees. Mr. 30 for 30 himself, Jameis Winston.
Okay. This is anti-clutch.
Anti-clutch. Baker Mayfield and Nick Chubb. So two Browns players. The only reason why Nick Chubb is on here is because championship week, 16-17, he had a total of 9 points.
Combined?
Combined.
Oh, wow.
In those final 2 weeks, Mr. 30 for 30 for himself, Jameis Winston, and Baker Mayfield, who I'm giving it to because of his performance on Monday night against those San Francisco 49ers, where personally, I'm not the only one that was affected by this. I was down by 1 point as a quarterback. The enemy, the other team was done. All the players were done. All I needed was 2 points to win the game. What does Baker do? Get -4 as a quarterback.
That's
How
going
does that
the wrong
happen?
Way. You're going the wrong way.
Baker Mayfield fought hard. He played a hell of a year. He deserves to win this anti-clutch award.
Congratulations to Baker Mayfield
Thank
for
you.
Your award. You can come and claim it here over at the beautiful studios in Sandy Hollow whenever it is that you feel like coming. I feel that Jameis Winston should not be included in that because there is nothing more clutch than when you need a pick six to set the record, you do it on the last play
That's
of
right.
the year. That is more clutch than anything that I have seen all year long right there with what Jameis Winston did. So I will
it.
Eradicate him from the nominee list for that one. Do we have any more awards or
we
are we going to talk disappointments?
So this is the Adam Vinatieri Award for the best individual kicker in a single game this year.
Oh, they've got feelings, too.
They do. And there's a couple nominees. And I'm going to see if you can guess who actually had the best performance. Jason Saunders, the kicker for the Miami Dolphins.
Flip's kid.
Harrison Buckner. And Young Ho
Bill's kid.
Are the three nominees.
Okay, are we going by fantasy points or are
yep.
we going by
fantasy
accuracy?
Points. The best game this year with the most points.
I almost feel like if listeners can name... Without Googling
those three guys,
the teams that two of the three of these guys play for, we should give them something from Sports Fan, to be honest with you. But I honestly don't know. Give me Jason
right.
Saunders.
Young Ho Koo and Harrison Buckner both tied with 18 points in a game so far this year. Actually, Koo had two of them, two 18-point games. Jason Saunders tied an NFL record for 7 made field goals in a single game, which added up to 23 fantasy points. A
couple of 50 yards.
Only kicker over 20 points. How about that?
Congratulations.
Absolutely.
We've got your trophy here. It's a big golden shoe with
then,
a sock.
And then finally, the 2019 Fantasy MVP Award. It's going quick today. The nominees, Chris McCaffrey, Michael Thomas, Lamar Jackson, Ezekiel Elliott, and your guy Jackson, Aaron Jones, received a nominee.
Oh, well, I'm clearly going Ezekiel Elliott here.
For your MVP?
No, I'm kidding. It's Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, absolutely. McCaffrey, he's kind of running away with the show here, winning all these awards. I think it's his fourth award that he's won so far, handed out by us. Now it's time for what you've been waiting for all week long, Jackson, our 2019 All-Fantasy Disappointment Team.
Do you have the list of the rest of your roster?
I do. I'm going to start with my captain, my leader of my team, who just won the Anti-Clutch Award, so he's winning a lot of awards tonight. And that is Mr. Mayfield himself, Baker Mayfield, from your Cleveland Browns. He's my captain, followed by David Johnson, Devontae Freeman at running back.
Why are they Cleveland Browns?
Because you have a lot of Packer front office people there, so it's your Cleveland Browns
No,
right
not
now.
Anymore. They all got cleared out. They all got cleared. John Dorsey's gone, man. He's going to go. He's going to find another job and start hiring some
Elliot
ex-cons.
Wolf.
I
He's
don't
still
think
there.
That, is he still there?
He's still there.
I thought Elliot Wolf
he had a
got
big
shown
part
the
in
too.
Hiring the new coach.
Oh man, that's
and
rough.
OJ Howard is my all disappointment tight end, and for receivers, my
hold
first
on, hold
here.
On, hold on, hold on. We've got quarterbacks, running backs, tight ends, and defense that we've picked so far for the fantasy all disappointment team. Correct.
Yes.
Okay, so you've got Baker Mayfield,
David Johnson,
David Johnson,
Devontae Freeman, OJ Howard,
and who's your defense?
Bears defense.
Oh, you took the Bears.
Outside the top 15.
You took the Bears defense?
You had the Chargers.
Oh, yeah. We both kind of rock, paper, scissored that last week during the break. Okay. All right. I've got Andrew Luck, I mean, there's nothing more disappointing than drafting a guy and then having him retire the next day, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean,
that's pretty damn disappointing. Yeah. I've got Todd Gurley and Joe Mixon. Todd Gurley went number one on a lot of boards and maybe performed as an RB2 this year, and it took a monumental comeback for that to happen. Mm-hmm. Joe Mixon didn't get started really until the third quarter of the season. Eric Ebron?
Yeah, big disappointment this year.
14 touchdowns mm-hmm. to four, and now he's going to get his way out of Indianapolis.
Yep.
And the defense, I wrote Chicago Bears here, who finished 17th, but that was actually yours. I took the Los Angeles Chargers. A lot of that had to do with injury, but also...
they finished in the bottom 10. Disappointment.
Terrible. Terrible disappointment.
Now, for receivers, though, I'm going with my guy, who I drafted in a bunch of leagues, did not work out, Juju Smith-Schuster, who did not finish inside, get this, the top 60 receivers. He finished on the outside. Wasn't even a top 60 receiver. Sure, he missed a few games. I get it. Dealt with injuries. Sure, he had Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph throwing him the ball back there. I get it. He wasn't even a top 60 fantasy receiver. That's hard to do, to not finish inside the top 60 as the number one receiver in a Pittsburgh offense, who almost made the playoffs, by the way.
Well, who also cleared the way for Antonio Brown, who I think that if people in the car are listening right now, they think receivers and most disappointing, we're thinking Antonio Brown. He's almost exempt from this list. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, that's otherwise why I didn't include him. Yeah, because he's easy. Yeah.
I mean, that's a Hall of Fame all-disappointment player.
Absolutely.
Hall of Fame.
But like, there was a lot of question marks going into the year about him, too.
That's tell
the thing.
More.
So, like, there was a risk when you went and took him as a third, second, fourth-round pick, whatever it was. There was risk involved with it because there was a situation going on in Oakland where he wasn't reporting to camp. He had the toe issue, whatever was going on, foot, whatever. I don't
Frostbite.
Know. Frostbite, that's what it was. Thank you. He had issues going on off the field, too. So we really didn't know what was going to happen with Antonio Brown and the Oakland Raiders. So there was risk going into that. Played one game with New England, and then now he's out of the league.
So basically, if you would have drafted right after last year's Super Bowl, Antonio Brown would have been the most disappointing wide receiver.
Yes.
But the fact that there was already some signs of, this isn't really going to end well in Oakland. It pushed him down a lot of draft boards.
I avoided him in all leagues. I wasn't going to, I'm not going to dip my toe in him. I'm not going to go anywhere near him.
Yeah. And so that's why Antonio Brown is not going to be on either of our lists. So you put together your list and you've got Juju Smith-Schuster, who didn't finish top 60.
I drafted him in the top three rounds in almost every league I could.
Man. Who's your other guy?
I'm going with Sammy Watkins. He had a great week one performance against my beloved Jacksonville Jaguars. 46 fantasy points, 3 touchdowns. It looked like this is the year Sammy Watkins is finally going to break out in Kansas City. He had a terrible year last year. He only had 4 games with 10 points or more. 2 of those games, 13 points or more. He had 13 one week and he had 46 another week. Had below 9 points every other game. That's horrendous.
For the type of player that Sammy Watkins looked like
and
he
was
going
offense,
to be.
No excuse.
Yeah.
No excuse in that offense.
But since he came out of college, it's kind of been the story with him. I mean,
he's a bust.
Yeah. He's not worth a third overall pick. I think
right.
That's where he went.
And he's
right?
Getting paid over $60 million.
Yeah. I went with, and this is a bit of, I don't know, you can look at it this way. I look at it like, for disappointments, I look at things through the lens of 12-team leagues. I'll just assume that every league that we're talking about is going to be a 12. Mm-hmm. Some are 10, some are 14 and 16. But I think that most of them are
12,
right?
Majority are 12, yep.
So I'm going to look at it through this lens and say that Davante Adams didn't have a touchdown for at least the first 4 weeks. Jordan, remember, this is a guy who finished with 15-plus fantasy points per game last season.
I agree.
He was the only guy in the NFL who did that. Mm-hmm. This year, he missed the top 20 at his position. 5 touchdowns. 997 yards.
Not even 1,000.
Davante Adams was tied with Michael Gallup for fantasy football wide receiver production. So I'm going to go with Davante Adams for this one.
Look, I agree with you, and I think that's your best pick so far. I mean, that I agree with you 100%. I'm shocked that he went against your Packers team and Davante Adams, because we know the talent's there. We know he's a legit number one receiver.
Oh, sure. He was also
a first-round pick in some leagues.
It was still, like, he did have turf toe. He went off in a Philadelphia game, and then after that, he wasn't around for a few weeks. I get that. I get that. But before that, he wasn't scoring touchdowns either.
I agree. He had a big down the stretch, too. The last couple weeks of the season, he had some big games, too, which helped him really to kind of even out what happened all year long. Because, I mean, if you exit out the last 4 weeks of this regular season, he would have nowhere close to 1,000 yards.
Right. And no one's going to remember all of that right now because he just set a record for Green Bay for the most wide receiving yards in the Super Bowl era in a playoff game. So it's not that he sucks. It's that this year his fantasy production was not there. I also thought, and in that same vein, Odell Beckham would have been better. You send Good the one. Guy over with an ascending Baker Mayfield taking the next step. You took the quarterback. I'm going to take his primary target. 25th is where Odell Beckham finished. You know, tell me that he lasted past the second round in your draft?
No.
Not a chance. You there in your car that he lasted beyond pick number 15, the top three wide receiver picked in your draft? Odell Beckham Jr. finished as the 25th best wide receiver. So if we're in a 12-team league here, that's a high flex option. Mm-hmm. And again, he had a couple of 100-yard games down the stretch. But overall, four touchdowns, just over 1,000 yards. He finished.
Somehow he got over 1,000.
Right. He finished just ahead of Jamison Crowder, Calvin Ridley, and Marvin Jones.
Marvin Jones only played half the season.
Odell Beckham Jr., 2019, my final inductee to my all-disappointment fantasy team. So that leaves us, and I'll just run through mine real quick again. Andrew Luck, who I think is the most disappointing player in the NFL this year, simply because people drafted him and then he retired. Todd Gurley, Joe Mixon, Eric Ebron, the Los Angeles Chargers, Devontae Adams, and Odell Beckham Jr.
Now for me, my heart and soul, my captain, my all disappointment team, Baker Mayfield at quarterback, David Johnson, Devontae Freeman at running back, tight end O.J. Howard, and my receivers, Juju Smith-Schuster, Sammy Watkins, and defense, the Bears.
Is there anybody on that is not on our list that you would add? Hit us up at SportsFan1330. We would love to just debate the most disappointing fantasy players of the 2019 season with you at SportsFan1330. He's Jordan Gothy. My name is Eric Jackson. We've got the championship games coming up here a little bit later on today. This is my favorite year of the NFL season, or favorite day of the NFL season.
Championship Sunday?
It's Championship Sunday, and it's the NFL draft.
It's actually our second Championship Sunday because technically we'd had one for fantasy football. So it's our second Championship Sunday, Jackson.
So I guess I've got three then. And we'll talk about the NFL one next.
More Sports Fan Football Sunday next on Sports Fan Radio 1330. It's Sports Fan Football Sunday on Sports Fan Radio 1330.
Back here on a Sunday morning at Sports Fan Radio 1330 and SportsFanRockford.com, where we've got Lewis Black tickets to give away to you. You can enter to win, and you can see him at the Coronado coming up on January 30th. It's getting better every day. It's the name of the show. And when you look at the poster for it, you know there's going to be a lot of sarcasm in this one. So check it out, SportsFanRockford.com, the Enter to Win, the Win Stuff tab. And go see a show right here in town. You don't have to travel far for it, and he's a funny guy. I'm Jackson. I am not. I'm along with Jordan Gothy here as we are talking about one of our favorite days. Is this your favorite day of the NFL?
One of my favorite days, yeah.
The draft is probably yours, right?
I love draft day. Love it. Love the movie, too, by the way. Draft day. Go check it out.
Have you started on the mock draft 1.0 yet?
I have not because I'm a stickler for this, but I always want to wait until the draft order is completely set.
Got it.
I go ahead and do it.
Okay. And when that's done, can we expect that on SportsFanRockford.com?
We will expect that, yes.
He is our fantasy football expert, but also someone who knows a lot more about college football players than I can ever fathom. That's why I lean on him for it, and that's why I lean on him for Packers discussion, as we've got two games coming up here today. Do you want to talk about the Houston and Kansas City one?
I really want to recap the Packers and Seahawks more, because I have a bunch of notes I want to go over.
We left that one kind of at an open at the very end of our talk in the first segment. So let's dive back into that. Packers and Seahawks, what you got?
So what I've noticed, I wrote a bunch of notes down from what I saw, and I went and looked at the stats to see if it would match up right. We know it was Matt LaFleur's first game being head coach in the playoffs. So we don't know. We wasn't really sure what to exactly expect. You know, we saw the same thing, Matt Nagy. I was curious to see how this Packer team was going to come out of the gate, to see how what their game plan was like. To me, this year, especially the game against Seattle, they're a very disciplined team. I mean, only four penalties, 30 yards. Seattle had more penalties for more yardage. And the team, most importantly, the defense got off the field on third down. Seattle was 3-for-9 on third down conversions. They got off the field on third down when they needed to. And what I've noticed from this Packers defense so far down the stretch in this playoff run, also I'm seeing the same thing in Tennessee right now. Who is the hottest team in the NFL right now? Is that their defense gives up a lot of yards, a lot of chunk of yards between the hash marks. But when it comes down, when they get inside their own red zone, for whatever reason, both defenses just lock in.
You're talking about Tennessee and Green
Tennessee
Bay.
Tennessee and Green Bay. I think there's a lot of similarities, but they just lock in, and they just refuse to let the opposing team get in the end zone rather than kick the ball through the uprights. I've just noticed there's a lot of similarities between the Titans and the Packers in that regard, and we saw it again a lot this past week. I know Seattle scored a lot of points in the second half, but in the first half, the defense was locked in, and they were playing well. Jair Alexander had a nice game. He made a few big plays. He's had his moments, but he did get beat up across the field between Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. He matched up well against DK, which I was kind of surprised to see, but Tyler Lockett had a lot of yards against him.
Yeah, there were some, and Jair Alexander also, I think he got credited for that forced fumble that he had that should have been picked up by Green Bay after the challenge. But Jair Alexander is, he's been up and down. They're mostly up. He's going to be an all-pro cornerback within the next 2 years, I think. But that's a guy who plays you tight and occasionally gets burned by the second move. But for the most part, if you've got a wide receiver and Jair is matching him up, Green Bay Packers fans have to feel pretty confident in that matchup. He's been up and down, but mostly up at times this season. And I also think that Kevin King has been more up than what some statistics and analytics would tell you as well. They did attack him a little bit. But for the most part, especially in the first half, Green Bay was able to keep Seattle's passing attack at bay.
Yeah, you've been a big Kevin King supporter, despite what PFF has said and despite what other sources have said about Kevin King and his coverage skills. But we talked about going into this to last week's matchup that the matchups we're most looking forward to was Tyler Lockett versus Jair Alexander, how they're going to match up together and how DK was going to match up against Kevin King. And surprisingly, Jackson, Kevin King had a better game, in my opinion, over Jair. He kept DK in check and only had 5 catches for only about 40 yards.
But look, both guys are 6'4". And both of them can run like the wind.
Yeah.
And the problem with Kevin King is that he'll get burned by the second move, but that's what comes from the route running. And DK Metcalf wasn't a guy that was the guy in the draft that's
fell. The knock on him.
The knock on him is that he cannot run routes. Well, it turns out he can run routes, but it's certainly not an elite skill.
Mm-hmm.
So Kevin King was able to keep him, in his hip pocket for most of the routes that they were running when they were matched up. There were times that Lockett was beating King when they were matched up together. But after a while, I feel overall, it was a good game by the Packers secondary.
So I went back a couple weeks, and in the second half, for the most part, Green Bay has been a really good second half team on defense. Offense is a different story. They've kind of put on cruise control and, they put around.
They're a one half team.
Basically. So Seattle outscored Green Bay last week 20-6 in the second half. They started making that comeback, but Green Bay ended up, of course, winning that game. So I went back to the last game where really the Packers got starstruck, whatever happened in San Francisco, where the Niners just ran all over them. They had no stopping. From start to finish, the Niners just completely won the game in all aspects. So I went back, and I looked at the Packers' second half. And from that 49ers game through to the Seattle, or up until the Seattle game, the Packers have outscored their opponents in the second half 68-28. I think that's a pretty big number. You're outscoring your opponents by 40 points in the second half. From that last game against the Niners, where they scored a lot of points in the second half, and Seattle made a comeback last week with 20 points in the second half. Up until the Seattle game, Packers were outscoring their opponents by over 40 points in the second half. They were a second-half ball club, it seemed like.
Yeah.
In the second half, defensively.
Yeah, Patton makes adjustments, and he has to, because when they get a lead, the knock on him, at least for me this year, is that they go into soft zone coverages. But for the most part in the second halves, lately, Green Bay has needed to score the points, so the defense has had to carry them throughout the rest of the second halves of these games. I didn't realize it was that much of a sway, that much of a difference in points. That's a great stat.
And to kind of the counterpart of it is flipping back over to the offense is in the second half, how great their defense has been in the second half down the stretch here. Their offense has been the exact opposite. They've struggled in the second half. It seems like once they get a lead in the first half, you mentioned this before, we were talking off the air about how They don't want to make the big play. They don't want to take the big risk.
Yeah, they're immune to running up the score.
And I guess it seems like they at second half they put it on cruise control and they just try to really just keep the game at the same score and then just try to win the game the way it is. Are you nervous at all that that's just what the Packers have done this season?
No, I'm not nervous about anything today. I'm not nervous about anything. It's house money at this point. Who would have thought that Matt LaFleur was going to take the Green Bay Packers to the NFC freaking championship game?
Who would
have thought that Aaron Jones was going to hold up this late into the season and that Davante Adams was going to be able to come back and look as good as he has, but the defense was going to help get them there? Look, this is house money at this point. Most people are expecting, and I don't want to jump the gun on this stuff, like, because we're going to talk about who we think is going to win, but most people are expecting the San Francisco 49ers to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl, and it's probably not even going to be that close on the scoreboard. For me, going into the game with low expectations, I am not concerned about it at all, because even if the Packers are winning 31-3 and blow it, it's not even going to be a top three most disappointing game of all time
really, for
Green Bay for me. No, because there's no expectations going in.
See, I feel like, I mean,
look,
I guess,
man,
I kind of understand where you're coming from, okay? At least you're in this position. That's all I got to say.
Look, man, Jerry Rice fumbled in 99, okay? Mm-hmm. Jerry Rice fumbled. That's what instituted the whole replay system that we have. Green Bay was going to go to their third Super Bowl in 4 years, but Jerry Rice fumbled. They called him down by contact. He was still on his feet when the ball was knocked loose. All right, mm-hmm. and then Terrell Owens caught that pass in the end zone, so Green Bay got knocked out by San Francisco. This was in 1999. Okay, that was one huge disappointment. John Elway, you know, in the Super Bowl, but I don't know if that's really top five. You got the 2015 NFC Championship game. You've got the Arizona game in 2009, Aaron Rodgers coming out party where there was a hit to the helmet, a blow to the head that wasn't called, a fumble return for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. You've got the Hail Mary in Arizona, and I know you just watched the Arizona Cardinals season on Prime.
All or Nothing, Amazon Prime. Great show. Go check it out if you can.
You've been telling me a lot about it. I recommend
Fantastic.
It as well. But the Arizona game also. You have the huge high of getting that Hail Mary, and then all of a sudden Larry Fitzgerald just on the first play of overtime just goes. So there's been plenty of disappointments. Mm-hmm. I'm not concerned about this San Francisco one. I know that this takes you off your point, and I apologize, but if you're a Packers fan, you should not feel bad going into this game. If they get destroyed, maybe they should have been destroyed, but it's been a hell of a season.
So let's go back to planning for this game against the Niners, and they've matched up really a lot in the playoffs, like you just mentioned, and in the last couple decades, they matched up a lot.
Favre used to destroy them in the 90s. Kaepernick has destroyed them in the early 2010s.
So going, if you're looking at the 49ers game plan, Kyle Shanahan's game plan going into this game, I think the two guys you got to make sure you take out is you got a game plan against Davante Adams and game plan against Aaron Jones, which, by the way, the 49ers allowed 21 total rushing yards against Dalvin Cook and that Vikings offensive line, who was really good run blocking throughout the season. They held him to 21 rushing yards.
Yeah.
That's key.
That's also a worse offensive line, though.
Right, but you
with
take...
with Bulaga coming back for
but
Green
that's
Bay.
But that's their game plan going into the game, is
sure.
You take Aaron Jones out of the game, take Davante Adams. Now, my question, Alan Lazard left the game early against Seattle last week.
He'll be fine.
Going into the game, if they somehow manage to take Adams and Jones both out of the game, who's next? Who's the next guy to step up? Jimmy Graham had a couple big plays last week. We talked about Lazard. You have Carew. You have guys. But who is MVS? Nowhere to be found. Allison had a big catch. Who is the next guy that has to step up? Because there has to be another guy.
Jimmy Graham would be the next logical target.
Are you expecting a lot from him, or are you nervous by saying
I don't expect anything from Jimmy Graham. But he made the best catch in the last three seasons for Green Bay. So,
by the best catch he's made in the last three seasons.
Well, there is that. So, Allison might see time on the field just because of the relationship he has with Rodgers, but really, Jake Kumerow can get open. You might have to take a deep shot with MVS if you can get the blocking up front. MVS?
Yeah.
Honestly, he can run a route. Rodgers hasn't hit the deep ball all season long.
He struggled all season. This was supposed to be his big year, but he struggled. So, again, that goes back to my question is that, like, each team has star players. They do.
Sure.
And if you look at the Packers' offense, where they've kind of puttered around the last couple of weeks, you have a star in Davante Adams. You have Aaron Rodgers, of course. I get it. You have Aaron Jones, another star in the making at running back. Who else is there? That's my question.
That's part of what makes this such an intriguing matchup, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't think it would be a 37-8 game on paper like it was 6 weeks ago. Because Davante Adams is better than any receiver that San Francisco has. Aaron Jones is better than any running back that San Francisco has. But overall as a unit, they're better than what Green Bay's got to offer for both accounts. Rodgers is better than Garoppolo, even still at this point in his career, I'd argue that. Defensively, I mean, San Francisco's better, but you can't discount what the Smith brothers have done and Kenny Clark in the last 6 weeks have done for Green Bay.
Yeah, down the stretch, the Packers have been phenomenal defensively.
It's all a matter of who wins that battle up front and what they're able to do. And it's also going to be interesting to me exactly what Jimmy Garoppolo does in his first NFC Championship game.
That's why I believe, and I'm glad you brought that up, where it starts up front. I think I think it ends up front. Who wins that battle consistently all night long, I think we're going to find out who wins that game. Whoever wins the battle in the trenches is going to end up winning that game. I do think it's going to be very close compared to where it was last time these two teams met on the same field. I think it's going to be a field goal game. I really do believe that.
Wow.
I'm leaning towards the 49ers.
So you're saying Green Bay covers because the spread when we record this is 7.5.
I take that back. I think the Packers are going to win by field goal. I'm going to Green Bay.
Jesus.
I think they get the revenge.
Okay, well, I can't go there with you. But I also picked Seattle to beat Green Bay, too.
You're going against them again for the second straight week? I thought you got to enjoy this, Jax. I know
I will.
Have high expectations, but you got to enjoy the position right now.
I've got very low expectations, and the only way that I can justify that Green Bay wins is because it's one of those fluky football things that happen when everyone says, and by everyone I mean, except for you, say that a team is supposed to lose, they end up winning.
Right.
Who thought Tennessee was going to beat Baltimore? Let's be real.
I didn't.
Straight up.
I got that game wrong.
How many people would have bet on that game? I'm sure that some were. But who would have thought that? You spot Houston 24 points on Kansas City in the first half. You think Kansas City's coming back?
Who would have thought that?
There's been some incredible games so far in the NFL playoffs. This would be the upset because there's been a huge upset every week so far. Mm-hmm. This one would be the huge upset. I don't see Tennessee continuing to do this against KC.
A great run the Tennessee has had. They've played phenomenal throughout the playoffs. I think the Chiefs at home in Arrowhead, they're not going to lose three times to an AFC South opponent. I think they get the job done. Mahomes and company, they're playing great football right now. I'm taking the Chiefs at home, and I'm taking the Packers on the road.
Chiefs 48, Tennessee 14.
I think it's going to be a defensive battle.
It's going to be a blowout, dude.
You think there's going to be a lot of points? I don't think so.
Here's the thing. All Mahomes has to do, I make it sound like it's easy, right?
Titans have a really good defense. They've been top 10 all season long.
Sure, but can they come back from being down 21? Can they come back from being down 14?
Through the
14?
Air, no.
That's the problem.
And
Kansas City can light it up like that.
They can, but also the Ravens could too. And the Titans shut them down.
They did.
I think the Titans are going to keep the Chiefs in check. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game, but I think the Chiefs will get the game eventually.
I just don't think that Pat Mahomes has to rely on a running game quite like Lamar Jackson did. And so that's kind of the problem. Right. So when we talk about this game, I think it is a different type of matchup than Baltimore and Tennessee was. We're both on the same page. I just think that one's Kansas City. I think that this might be the biggest blowout of the entire playoffs.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, and I love the run that Tennessee went on, and that's not going to discount
great.
How...
It's a fun team to watch.
Oh, hell... Remember like week 14, you and I were talking about Tennessee. We weren't even going to put them in our pick six games for the week because they were just a boring team and we weren't interested
in them. At one point in the season, they were. I don't know if it was that late, but early on, yeah.
It's crazy.
That turned into the Eagles. They are a boring team to watch.
Yeah, they...
By the way, they're on all or nothing this year.
Are they?
It was just announced, yeah.
Oh, man. Carson Wentz is,
We're going to get to behind the scenes and see how Carson Wentz moves that team.
I just don't know if he's ever going to be consistently as good as playoff Nick Foles that one year.
That's a topic we should talk about next week.
Or next year. Well, we've got the Pro Bowl next week, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's going to suck.
We're not going to talk about the Pro Bowl. I mean, come on. It's a scrimmage.
Yeah, are we going to? Here's the show next week. We're gonna draft our Pro Bowl players to our respective teams.
The skills challenge is more interesting than the actual Pro Bowl.
You know what they need to bring back? Is the NFL quarterback challenge.
How about the 40-yard dash? That'd be kind of fun.
Did you ever watch the 40-yard dash would be cool too. Full gear on though. Did you ever watch the NFL quarterback competitions.
Yes.
They're replaying
love
the old
them.
Ones
mm-hmm.
right now on NFL Network. They'll occasionally have them throughout the year.
Love them.
Old Favre, like John Elway and stuff. Like, those were cool, man. If they brought that back, how much would you love to see Mahomes chuck a football 70 yards?
Young Peyton Manning, too, back in the day?
That's true.
Those were fun to watch.
They really were. So that'd be cool if they brought that back. I would watch that and make it appointment television. Mm-hmm. You're looking at the clock. I'm looking at the clock. I know we got to get out of here. You've got Kansas City. I've got Kansas City. You're going to take Green Bay over San Francisco.
I'm taking Green Bay this week. I think they get it done.
What's your record this year in the playoffs so far?
Not good. Okay. I lost my first six games, so not good.
It's disappointing. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. But I do know that we're going to be back here next Sunday at 10 a.m. to talk about it. For Jordan Gothy, I'm Eric Jackson. Enjoy your football Sunday.